The time has come to get ready for the 2022 World Cup. And what better way to prepare than by revisiting the World Cup's most amazing goals? I'm Brian Phillips. I'm making a podcast about the history of the Men's World Cup, told through the stories of 22 iconic goals. The show's called 22 Goals. It's out now on the Ringer Podcast Network, and we're having so much fun.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear are so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. We're not all professional athletes, but we all have health goals. That's why Anytime Fitness gives you access to personalized plans and support from a coach. Plus, you can track your training, nutrition, and recovery progress with the Anytime Fitness app, just like the pros. With 24/7 access to more than 5,000 gyms worldwide, get more from your gym membership. Visit anytimefitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, restrictions all apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Jam Session. I'm Juliette Littman.
I'm Amanda Dobbins.
We got J-Lo back in our podcast. It's been like a month at least since we've last talked about her, but we're going to today, Amanda. I'm pretty excited.
I'm thrilled. J-Lo plus The Crown. It's like a vintage Jam Session, but also a new and exciting Jam Session.
And a random royal story that I'm really excited to get to as dessert after talking about The Crown. Check in on Lindsay Lohan and just, you know, the general landscape. But I would like to start with J-Lo and her Vogue cover.
Okay.
I'm not sure if it's just my state of mind. I don't know if it's the coming holidays. I don't know if I'm like going soft. I found this to be incredibly moving. And I like almost cried reading it. The way that J-Lo talked about the deliberate ways in which she and Ben Affleck are blending their families and their children, I thought was like really sweet. And J-Lo just being like, yeah, I'm just a romantic. That's who I am. That's why I changed my name. Like, I don't know. It just really hit me. And then my favorite part of this, she says that Ben Affleck's ex-wife is an amazing co-parent. And I just thought that was like really sweet. I don't know, Amanda. I really liked his profile. Sue me.
I was charmed by it. I delighted in it. I don't think that I was as moved like to my core as you were, which is maybe just cynical, Amanda.
And maybe the difference between who we are.
I don't know. Some, you never know. I feel like that's the joy of our friendship, you know, is that it's a surprise. You don't know how each person is going to respond.
It's a great point.
This had a little bit too much therapy speak for me, which once again, I love therapy for myself, for other people in my life, for celebrities, for the world at large. Has been great for humanity. Do I like hearing other people's like book reports about their therapy? Like, not always. I don't know. I just, you know what I mean? Like, I recognize the language while like also acknowledging that it seems like she's in a great place, that therapy's been very helpful for her. She's very thoughtful about being a parent, which is really lovely. I agree. I got to be honest. I don't know whether Jennifer Garner read that one parentheses aside about her with like the same joy and like emotional movement that you did. And I sort of like chuckled at it personally. That's just the child of divorce in me speaking. But I thought it was classy, you know, better than the alternative. I did note the next sentence was that Jennifer Lopez like does not have that same arrangement, which is the only mention of Mark Anthony, which I thought her ex-husband and the father of her children. So I thought that was noticeable.
Especially because then she says the lowest point in her life was right after her divorce from Mark Anthony, when she was a single parent and it was in 2011. Her career was not going well. Actually, I learned a couple of things. I wanted to talk about the therapy speak first, because a lot of articles that we criticize, it's like implicit therapy speak. It's like regurgitated, like you've practiced saying it with your therapist. Jennifer Lopez being Jennifer Lopez, like, brings that to the next level. Here's a quote from J-Lo. "The combination of them being her parents, was what I've had to figure out. It shaped what I liked as far as my personal life was concerned. Without infringing on their privacy, that was it. Who your mom is and who your dad is and how they love you and teach you to love become the positive and negative patterns that you have to overcome in life." And that's like, that's therapy.
That's great. That's direct. That's thoughtful. Like, I'm not trying to criticize therapy. I will say, like, in my own life, in my own therapy at this point, when they start talking about my parents, I'm like, yeah, I get it. Okay, like, our parents shaped us, like, sure, blah, blah. You know, like, at some point, I'm just like, my brain turns off on this. I love my parents. They're not listening to this, but you know what I mean. It's not Jennifer Lopez. It's not therapy. It's not the work. I agree that this is, like, a pretty sincere and also well articulated and, like, engaged version of it. It often seems like celebrities are using kind of therapy speak in order to avoid saying anything about themselves, and also have not really applied any of the thinking actually. And I don't get that vibe here. So you're right. I don't know. I guess I was feeling cynical.
I understand
on this particular one.
On the career front, another thing she said that I thought was really interesting was she credits becoming a judge on American Idol as, like, revitalizing her career after a low point in 2011. And I thought that was really fascinating. And she basically says, like, doing a reality show made people like me. And all I had to do was be myself, I would have done it sooner. That's a paraphrase, pretty close to the spirit of the article. As someone who covers reality TV for The Ringer, I was like, thank you, Jennifer Lopez, for validating this part of pop culture that happens to be massive, but is often undermined. So thank you. And two, I just thought that was, like, really interesting. You so infrequently hear someone of Jennifer Lopez's stature really, like, talk about a specific moment, especially when it's, like, as, like, at this point, mainstream as American Idol, that I thought that was really fascinating. And also so true for many people. I would say, like, Blake Shelton and Adam Levine are only famous now because of being on The Voice. And there's just, like, a lot of people that have benefited from these competition shows. And this is the most plain I've ever read someone explain that.
Yeah, it's incisive. It's savvy. Jennifer Lopez is an incredibly successful businesswoman and talent and works really hard at it, as we have always said. And she's also, like, you know, very talented. But I like the behind the curtain, like, understanding of how all this works. And, you know, she's not ashamed of it also, which, to your point, is great. But she's just also, you know, pretty matter of fact of it. I don't know why I was being so negative. I feel bad. I really enjoyed this and I really like her.
Be you.
I know, but I feel like my presence on this podcast up to now has not accurately reflected my feelings about Jennifer Lopez or this profile. So I agree with you. I thought that was great. Can I tell you a couple things that stood out to me?
Yes, please.
I really liked the answer to this sort of annoying question about the New York Times op-ed about changing her name. I don't think anyone in life, well, this is not true, that people should have to respond to New York Times op-ed sections, especially politicians and, you know, people with public responsibilities. But this one is an exasperating question, even though I did also have that moment of being like, huh, she changed her name. And does she really need to change her name? And, you know, it's always projecting. It's always, like, your own feelings about this sort of stuff. But I thought the answer was great. And, like, and thoughtful, and also it's her business and she can do whatever she wants. So I was very charmed by her.
Yeah, I'll read it. It was nice. She says, "People are still going to call me Jennifer Lopez, but my legal name will be Mrs. Affleck because we're joined together. We're husband and wife. I'm proud of that. I don't think that's a problem." Then she goes on to say that she didn't care about Ben Affleck becoming Mr. Lopez because it's not traditional. And then this is really the heart of it. "Doesn't have any romance to it. Feels like it's a power move. You know what I mean? I'm very much in control of my own life and destiny and feel empowered as a woman and as a person. I understand that people have their feelings about it, and that's okay too. But if you want to know how I feel about it, I just feel like it's romantic. It still carries tradition and romance to me. And maybe I'm just that kind of girl." You know what, Jennifer Lopez? We now know that resoundingly about you, yes, based on your home goods aesthetic and this quote. So it's very clear. We get it. But we're happy for you.
But I think the thing about power dynamics is perceptive also. And, you know, but she points it out without being dismissive of anybody else's feelings, even though, again, it's like really her business and she can do whatever she wants. I'm pro. Here's another observation I had. So she did the first part of this interview on the set of the film Atlas. And I will read Vogue's description. This piece is by Rob Haskell. Here's the description of Atlas. It's a straight-up sci-fi action thriller in which Lopez plays a military intelligence analyst assigned to reconfigure a potentially lethal form of artificial intelligence. Okay, I don't know what that means, but that sounds exactly like the movie that Julia Roberts is running lines for in Notting Hill with Hugh Grant, you know, and then she's also got to get home to like Cartwright and her daughter or something. But I was like, oh, wow. Okay, you're in the Notting Hill phase of your career, which is very funny.
Hilarious.
The final thing I wanted to point out was that these photos were taken at Flamingo Estate, the Los Angeles home / advertising company / I don't know, purveyor of soaps and expensive Harvest Box that I'm kind of obsessed with on Instagram. As you know, I've talked about it before on this podcast, but basically one of the functions of Flamingo Estate now is for people to take their Vogue cover photos there. And that happened once again. And I'm very amused by it.
The photos are stunning.
Yeah, she's beautiful.
What I really like about them is she's wearing, it's like a neutral or like a natural makeup look. And I would say these photos accentuate her age, which is not to say that they make her look old, but they make her look in her 50s, which is what she is. And she looks beautiful and taut as ever. But I just think that like the way that these were edited was very specific as to like have a sort of naturalistic aesthetic and is really beautiful. My favorite one is of her from behind. She's wearing a white dress. She looks like a bride / ballerina. But I really noticed that I felt like this was a different way of editing Jennifer Lopez and I really like it and respect it. And she looks amazing.
She's beautiful.
Rob Haskell confirmed it. One quick question.
Yes.
Vogue doesn't have a lot of men covering women for the cover of the magazine. I thought this was a pretty like even article. I wouldn't have guessed a man or a woman had written it. I didn't feel like there was like an overwhelming sensibility, which is sort of like, that's like one of the best things I think you can get from a profile. This was really well done. I was just curious if that struck you one way or another.
So Rob Haskell is sort of a longtime Vogue cover story writer. And this struck me as just like an old hand and a known quantity that
she agreed to it.
Yes, which, you know, I don't know. My understanding is that typically Vogue subjects do not get approval, but with someone of Jennifer Lopez's caliber, you know, I bet you get opinions one way or the other before a writer's assigned. So that, you know, more than anything, I was just like, oh, they went with like a known quantity.
Right. Well, good idea, because this article is great. Love you, J-Lo. Good luck. Happy holidays to the Lopez Affleck family. Let's move on. The Crown has been back, season 5. I think it's day 5 since release. Actually, day 6, if you include Wednesday, the day it came out. Yeah. I think we've both watched 4 episodes. I may have watched 5, but I can't quite recall.
Okay.
And what do you think?
I'm having a great time. Obviously, I've been waiting a large portion of my life for The Crown to come back and also this particular season of The Crown, aka the Diana season of The Crown. And I am 4 episodes in. And I think what has struck me so far that I like and that I think is very clever and very typical of Peter Morgan is, you know, this is the period of time when Diana was so oversaturated and overcovered to the point that it felt like there wasn't anything particularly new to be done. And in the 4 episodes that I've seen, they've used her sparingly and I think far more effectively because they aren't trying to recreate every single thing that you know and that you've seen footage of. Now, I know in the back half of the season, spoiler alert, they're going to cover some things more specifically and veer a bit towards recreation. But I think that's really savvy and it's working for me so far.
It's a good point. I agree. I'm so angry with the Dominic West casting that I am having a hard time getting past it. It's absolutely outrageous.
I'm just like, I currently feel about The Crown the way that I used to feel when I would get home from camp, which was like, oh, everything's cool. It's still warm out. Life's great. But like, it's not camp. Camp being summer camp, not the aesthetic. This cast is very good. The Crown is a very masterful show. I deeply miss the season 3 and 4 cast so much that it's just like less fun, but like, it's still a great show. But like, well, I mean, the trio of Coleman, Menzies, and O'Connor is absolutely unbeatable. Like, those are like just three elite. And then Helena Bonham Carter. And
well, it's, oh, hold on. So that's a great point. And I want to talk about the casting a bit because I have been thinking a lot about what they're trying to communicate with the casting, because it's who they pick to play these roles or to recast and subsequently how those people play the roles say a lot about like what the show thinks about the various people, you know, and kind of like tips its hands a little bit. And so I will just say, even the beginning of season 3, you're the only person who is just like, this is 5,000 times better than seasons 1 and 2. Everyone else felt like it was a little, the transition was a little strange in the first few episodes of season 3. You love Coleman and Menzies so much.
Yeah, I do.
That you, but I think you are a little bit on the,
I'm on the far end of the spectrum for rarer Coleman opinion. And Menzies.
Yeah. So some of it is just like, it's awkward transition, right? You know, it is like a little weird. And they've been doing all of those flashbacks, I feel like, to try to extend some of the continuity, because they know it's me too. I think that, you know, they're very well done. But the other thing is, like, I think the casting is all pretty intentional. And I do wonder whether The Crown is like the show, I don't want to, it's not souring on the royals, but is trying to push you towards the opinion that these are not all people that you're supposed to be rooting for in the same way that you were.
It's funny you say that. Dominic West is very hateable. If you watch The Crown, if you watch The Affair, you're familiar with that. My problem is he just has like a confidence that I don't think aligns with the type of confidence that I think King Charles has. Like, it's just a different types of bravado. Putting him aside, I feel like Jonathan Pryce is playing Philip in a way that is much more, has a softness and a benevolence to him that Menzies did not portray and I don't think existed. So I have a problem with the Philip portrayal this time around.
That's so funny. I'm not really getting all benevolence from him.
Sure. And in fact, yeah, not all, but just some.
A few moments of edginess and like almost like a coiled, like, or recoiled, I'm not really sure which word would apply here, but like about to pounce nature that I didn't really get from Menzies. And that was always my impression about Philip. I do think he softened a bit, at least internally, as the years went on, which is, he certainly didn't soften externally, especially in his, you know, perspectives or quotes to pretty much anyone he interacted with, including most people of color in the Commonwealth countries. But it seemed like, I don't know, he was nicer to his family as the years went on, which is not hard to improve upon. So that doesn't seem inaccurate to me. But I don't know, I'm not getting like really nice vibes from him. I'm sure Jonathan Pryce is a lovely person, but his on-screen persona has never been like warmth and charisma to me.
He's such a creep on Game of Thrones.
He's like, yeah, he's like prickly and weird. So that's translating for me. And I kind of read that as intentional. But I had a couple friends text me over the weekend about Imelda Staunton, who is cast as the queen, and who's like absent from a lot of the first 4 episodes, which again is, I think, sort of an intentional in terms of like what the queen was up to during this time, which was like not doing much and becoming sort of increasingly sidelined. But I had one friend who has seen all the Harry Potter movies, and I don't know whether you know the role that Imelda Staunton plays in the Harry Potter films. Not a likable character and a memorable an unlikable character. And I had one friend be like, well, I don't know why they cast Imelda Staunton. I can't not think of this Harry Potter character. And I think there are other associations with her as just sort of, what's the word I'm looking for? I'm not trying to be rude, but Imelda Staunton often plays kind of like school marmish people almost, you know, again, like not center stage, wildly charismatic individuals, which seems intentional in the casting. So, you know, it's kind of interesting when I have gotten the sense that some people feel a little frustrated with the casting and aren't as like enthusiastic about some of the people playing the roles. I'm not like subtweeting you on this. I'm like subtweeting the internet.
I didn't feel subtweeted.
And some of me has wondered whether that's the point. That's all. And I don't know because I haven't finished the season, but I'm like, oh, it's interesting. I would say that the first four seasons of The Crown have been just like incredibly staunchly pro Elizabeth. And I wonder if that's changing. I don't know.
I think the end of episode four is when they have the title card at the end talking about the Prince's Trust. Did you see that?
No. So that is, maybe that's five. Yeah.
We can discuss it in the future.
Are they doing some Charles PR?
A little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was also wondering if that like got the show released. Like, I don't think they ever were not going to release it, but given the relationship with the Sussexes and the pushback from people in England and the death of the Queen, I just wonder if they like made some last minute adjustments to soften things a tiny bit. But who knows? We can discuss that when we both finish the season.
Yeah.
On the Diana front, I don't think it's possible to like add anything to the Diana discourse after you read the Diana Chronicles, which I read at your behest. So I actually find the Diana stuff really boring. I'm just like, yeah, I'm like, yeah, we all know about this. Charles was kind of right. There's not a ton of there. And also you and I also both just read the Palace Papers. And I'm like, if there was anything to add, I got it from the anecdote about taking Will to lunch with Piers Morgan. Like, I just feel like I'm good. So I've been really enjoying that there isn't like a ton of Diana.
Yeah. That just warms my heart that you're at a place now where you're just like, I've read Tina, so I don't need this. I would love for the rest of the world to get to that place with you. I don't think they are yet. Yeah, I agree. And I think it's just also if you, because she's so visually memorable, especially in this 90s run, you've seen a lot of the clothes, you know, like her sweatshirts and like bike shorts thing had a whole fashion revival that I have been borrowing. So, you know, no judgment. But if they were trying to just hit every note of that, it starts looking sort of like SNL parody, you know? So I think telling the story through different characters and side characters. And, you know, in one of the episodes that I watched, I think the only Diana on screen was like a billboard in Piccadilly Square. I don't know which square. London listeners can let us know. That just is like an advertisement for Andrew Morton's book, but it's with Debicki as Diana doing the pose. And I was like, oh, that's really clever, but that's it. And that's all you need to kind of,
she looms large, literally.
Exactly. Though, you know, I have wondered for people who are not as schooled in the Diana Chronicles as you and I are, whether they're able to fill in the gaps as much as we are. But like, maybe you don't need to, because once again, this is a fictional show. It's not like it's not history. Though, it's so interesting. You and I both know it's fictional. And I want more Crown, first of all, always and forever. But also, I think people can understand that. But the closer you get to real life, people watch this and
it's less fun. Honestly, the closer it gets to real life, less fun I find it. Because like one thing that's also, I think with Imelda Staunton, that's a little bit hard when with like this oldest version of the Queen on the show is that the Queen really didn't give a lot of speeches in like the last 30 years. Like she gave like the scheduled Christmas address and like things like that. So when she like speechifies or like delivers a monologue about marriage or like her role in the church, it feels so dissonant from the media coverage of the last 30 years that it's kind of like harder to buy into that than like Olivia Colman being surprised when they watch themselves on TV or Claire Foy, like, you know, just like feeling her way through this relationship with Winston Churchill. Like it's a lot harder to like feel immersed in it because we have so many data points to compare it to, especially
you and me.
But it's a great show. I love the music. I think this is the best scored season. The way that it has like the choral version of Gilmore Girls La-La's. I'm just like loving it.
Yeah, dude. Which was like, they introduced that with Diana last year, right?
Yeah.
It's a really well-made show, well-written. Like,
Oh my God, the budget has to be outrageous. The number of locations they use per episode.
Well, I was about to say, I really think that their CGI palaces are getting a lot better.
Yeah, I agree.
It was tough going there in the third or the fourth season, maybe. I think like the houses couldn't, the VFX houses couldn't keep up. But the palaces and all of the fake, because I do think some of them were locations, and I think increasingly a lot of it is CGI'd, but it's looking better.
Especially COVID seasons.
Yeah, they, like, exactly.
Couldn't do as much. Fun show. Love that it's popular. Just great stuff.
This episode is brought to you by eBay Authenticity Guarantee. You'll know real when you get it. It'll say eBay Authenticity Guarantee, and you'll feel it. Maybe it's a head-turning handbag, a watch that says it all, jewelry that makes you look like the gem. Sneakers and streetwear so fresh, every step feels fly. When it comes to style and luxury, eBay gets it. They're making sure the things you love are checked by experts. Not just any experts, specialized experts, real people who love this stuff, with real hands-on authentication experience. So when you see that shiny blue checkmark that says Authenticity Guarantee, shop with confidence. Every inch, stitch, sole, and logo is verified authentic through a detailed inspection. That's how you know that eBay's got your back. Because when you finally step into those sneakers, put on that watch, get your real gold glow up, swing that handbag over your shoulder, or step out in that streetwear, you'll realize that feeling is unlike any other. With eBay Authenticity Guarantee, you can trust that feeling of real is always in reach. Ensure your next purchase is the real deal. Visit ebay.com for terms.
This episode is brought to you by Empower. You got money questions like, can I retire early? What are my best savings options? Can I afford to pay for my kids' education? Luckily, Empower has all the answers. With Empower's real-time dashboard and real live conversations, you get clarity on your real-life financial goals. So join 18 million Americans and Empower what's next. Start today at empower.com. Tap the banner or visit this episode's page to learn more. Sponsored by Empower, not an endorsement or a statement of satisfaction by a client. This episode is brought to you by NetSuite by Oracle. The less your business spends, the more margin of money you have. I think that's pretty obvious for everyone, but actually doing it, that's easier said than done because the cost of everything is going up these days. So do the smart thing. Switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth so you can easily reduce costs and headaches. NetSuite specifically helps by reducing IT costs since it lives in the cloud with no hardware required, and cutting the costs of maintaining multiple systems since everything you need is on one suite. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. See for yourself how effective NetSuite can be and try it out today. And by popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/ringer. That is netsuite.com/ringer.
On the topic of royals, I was reserved a lot of times this one article from the New York Times, in which the headline is Norwegian princess engaged to a shaman gives up her royal duties.
Okay, so when you're saying you were served this, can you talk us through the various places it was served to you?
When I opened up Google on my phone, it was like in the Discover feed, which is actually one of my favorite places to get articles. It was on my Twitter feed many times.
Okay. Like people that you follow shared it? Or
no, like the New York Times kept sharing it over and over. And I've muted so many people that I follow that I get like a ton of New York Times.
I have a similar arrangement on an app that probably won't exist for much longer. Anyway.
It's a story about Martha Louise, the 51-year-old princess of Norway. Her parents are King Harald and Queen Sonja, and they're still on the throne. And she has basically done something similar to Harry, but I would say even greater distance and with even more acrimony and frankly, far wackier details. I mean,
do you have a sense that it's more acrimony or is it just weirder?
I thought her parents' quotes were not particularly kind, but let me find the one that I particularly like. But would you like to explain what Louise is into?
Sure. So Martha Louise, well, I would say that she's into, as Gwyneth Paltrow would put it, alternative modalities of pretty much everything. And the sort of inciting factor of her release, of renouncement of her royal duties, was that she is engaged to a shaman who has in fact been featured on Gwyneth Paltrow's website. The shaman is named Durek Verrett, and I will read the New York Times description of him: an American celebrity shaman and the inventor of the Spirit Optimizer, a healing amulet that he sells on his website for $222.
So here's some more data about her, Martha Louise. Her celestial interactions led her 15 years ago to co-found the center, the spiritual center that encourages its students to find their inner source of truth and make contact with the angels and the divine universe. She also communicates with horses and believes she gets messages from them.
Wait, hold on. Let me read another sentence. By the way, so this piece is written by Emma Bubala and Henrik Preiser-Leibel, or Libel. So I apologize if I didn't pronounce that correctly, but they did a wonderful job communicating their feelings through very dry sentences. Here's the sentence. According to a 2012 poll, while 15% of the Norwegian population believed that Princess Martha Louise communicated with angels and dead people, 47% thought that her practices had a negative effect on the royal family.
They also add her least popular ability, according to polls, was making contact with the dead, which she claimed in media interviews around 2010 that she could do.
The next sentence is really good because it just references one of Norway's most famous clairvoyants who is like negating her in public. This is a really, really great
piece. It's a really good article. Just like look it up, people. I just wanted to share it to make it clear that while the British royal family is the most famous to us, they're certainly not the wackiest. And they're definitely, I would venture to say they're not the worst, though I don't know how you want to measure worst.
Yeah, well, at some point, the alternative modalities verge into COVID fake claims, etc. I don't want to say like denying, but it's a source of misinformation, it would seem, and that's not great. And that does seem to be why her parents, the king and queen of Norway, seem to be distancing themselves from what's going on here.
This is what the shaman said, her fiance, Mr. Verrett. When he got COVID, he said in an Instagram video, he searched for a reason and found that he was a workaholic, constantly there for people and giving, giving, giving. He said he realized that he needed to take time to do his breath work and listen to the ancestors, and that he had used his white lightbringer amulet to get the poisons out of my system. One could construe this as an advertisement for his amulet and also having nothing to do with science. So reasons to distance oneself. Anyway, please read this article. It's the New York Times International Desk at its absolute best. So thank you again to these writers, Emma Bubala and Henrik Preiser-Leibel. Last note of the week, Amanda. Lindsay Lohan did a lot of press for her Netflix film, which I have not watched. And I got the impression that, much like us here at The Ringer, people just are embracing this moment with glee, which really is like the ultimate testament to the power of nostalgia. It's like a very funny thing to behold. I don't know. I've been enjoying it. And so is Lindsay Lohan, frankly. She seems like she's having a great time.
I think everyone is embracing having Lindsay Lohan back on our radars in a healthier like fashion, in a non-depressing fashion.
No mugshots yet.
I have also not seen the film. What is it? Falling for Christmas?
Falling for Christmas.
Those who have, including our producer, Jade, I can't say they've embraced that with enthusiasm. Would be like the early reviews. But, you know, it is nice to have her back. It's nice to see her on Ryan and Kelly.
And Jimmy Fallon.
Yeah, to see her working again. Not that I've consumed the work. I'm not sure I plan to. Are you going to watch it, actually?
I don't really get involved with these Christmas movies. I don't really care about them. I'm not really like a cheesy movie type. I mean, I like cheesy movies, like a specific kind, like theatrically released rom-coms, not Hallmark okay. Christmas movies and Netflix Christmas movies. So it's probably a no. To be honest, I have a lot of TV going on right now as well. So
okay, what else is on the lineup?
Well, Sex Lives of College Girls comes back this week. So excited.
Oh, that's exciting.
Jody and I are recapping it for the Prestige TV podcast, so check that out. You know, The Bachelor still forsakenly is on. There's The Challenge. There's Housewives of Salt Lake and Potomac.
Those are big ones.
I was thinking of watching Andor just because everyone's really into it.
I do enjoy Andor. I'm not caught up because I had to put my life on hold in order to watch The Crown and also like 4,000 other movies that are being released right now. But yeah, Andor is very good.
There was something else that was like legitimately good that I was also watching, but now I don't remember. I don't know. When I had COVID, I watched a lot of TV. It was great, one does when they have COVID, I think. But yeah, anyway, I probably won't be participating, but who knows? Could change.
Okay.
Never know.
Will you watch her next Netflix movie? It was a two-picture deal, as they say in the biz.
They just finished shooting it in Ireland.
Right.
And I believe that Ayesha Curry is in it.
Oh, wow. Okay. Okay, so you'll do...
Non-Christmas.
Non-holiday, non-denominational, cheesy Netflix movie.
I like Christmas. I like movies that are like fall into the Christmas genre, like National Lampoon, Home Alone, Family Stone, The Holiday. Sure. But I don't like the made-for-TV, like cheesy Christmas movies. I'm happy for Vanessa Hudgens, though. This is her time.
One quick holiday follow-up or holiday-related follow-up. Holiday the film, not holidays. Did you see that AYR sent Nancy Meyers some sweaters?
No, I didn't. Oh, that's nice.
And she posted, thank you. So on the one hand, I feel they probably owe her a bit more. On the other hand, I wish they would send me some sweaters, you know?
Someone was recently raving about their jeans, and it wasn't you, someone else.
Yeah, I haven't tried the jeans, but those button downs, I'm telling you.
People love them.
They've gotten me everywhere. So it's not a coastal grandma thing. I'm not a grandma yet.
Yet. Neither am I. Thank you to Jade Whaley for producing this podcast. Thank you to Peter Morgan for bringing us joy. We'll be back next week.
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.